I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC, and this is the news.
People are voting like their life depended on it.
Politics collides with COVID. With just 2 weeks to go until the election, brand new CNBC polls show the race getting tighter. A controversial new challenge. Give healthy people an unproven COVID-19 vaccine. Then intentionally inject those people with the virus. Who would step up and volunteer for that? Stimulus showdown. As leaders try to make a deal, billions of dollars already earmarked to help Americans just sitting there unspent. Why isn't it being put to work? And holiday plans in limbo. We want to see family and friends, but how? Tonight, COVID guidelines to keep you safe.
Good evening. Just 2 weeks left until the election. COVID is rising and colliding head on with politics. COVID cases increasing in 42 states, over the past week, including battleground Wisconsin, where early in-person voting began today. Right now, President Trump holding a rally in Erie, Pennsylvania, where hospitalizations have been spiking. First Lady Melania Trump was supposed to be there with him, but canceled. Her spokeswoman says she has a lingering cough from her COVID infection. Dr. Jill Biden campaigning in Michigan as Joe Biden stays off the trail, his campaign insisting to prepare for the final presidential debate day after tomorrow. Meanwhile, time is running out for a COVID relief deal before the election. Today, more mixed signals from Capitol Hill on where things are headed for Americans. Details on that coming up in just a few minutes, but here's a hint. For people in need, it's not looking good. We have reporters covering it all, focusing first, as the candidates often do, on battleground Wisconsin. Early voting and COVID rising in the same state at the same time. So we have two reporters there. First to Shaquille Brewster in Milwaukee.
Shep, the only thing longer than the lines of people here in Milwaukee waiting to vote are the lines of cars. People taking advantage of this curbside voter option as this pandemic continues to spike here in Wisconsin. You see election officials going and bringing the ballot to people, and people can vote from the comfort of their own cars. Now, what people have been telling me as they're waiting in line is it's really the coronavirus that has been driving them out. People understanding the seriousness of it and the importance of the political leaders, and they want to get their voices heard in that measure. Listen to my conversation with a voter who came out early this morning about what was different from what she saw in 2016.
People are voting like their life depended on it. We see COVID. People are dying. People have not seen an unemployment check. People wondering when they're going to eat. I mean, we just have a lot of stuff going on, and it's going to make the difference whether somebody lived today or tomorrow. It's our life depends on it.
And before these doors even open, more than 915,000 people across the state of Wisconsin already cast their ballot. I spoke to the mayor of Milwaukee, who said that is their intention. People voting by mail, people coming to vote early in person. And that will alleviate some of the pressure on election day.
Shep. And Shaq, while Wisconsinites vote, they struggle with surging COVID. Hospitals adding beds, funeral homes burying the dead. 215 members of one hospital system in COVID isolation recently. New cases across the state almost doubled, say health officials, in just the past 30 days. They're seeing a spike now like nothing since COVID began. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez is live at a COVID testing station in Milwaukee. Gabe?
Hey there, Shep. Well, yes, the cases are rising here in Wisconsin. State officials saying today there were about 4,500 new confirmed cases today, although they did say part of that was due to some updated software over the weekend caused some of those cases to be lumped together across multiple days. But this COVID testing site had opened yesterday. We came to you from here yesterday as well. And today, again, long lines of cars, of course, not for voting, but for COVID testing. It went for about 7 or 8 hours today that people were lined up here. But it isn't just here in Wisconsin, Shep. This is happening across much of the country and including parts of the Midwest. Just to our south in Illinois, there are new restrictions in place across the southern part of the state. The mayor and the governor are sounding the alarm. And we're also hearing from a doctor at Northwestern in Chicago. This pandemic is clearly taking its toll.
We all feel better about our ways to protect ourselves. We know what the importance of masking, universal masking, distancing, hand washing, We know it works, but we're tired and people are tired and there's, you know, starting to get lax. And that's what we're seeing come into our hospitals now. I feel like professional soccer goalies just trying to keep people safe until their bodies can recover. And it's fine for us to do that when we have a couple balls coming at us. When it comes to 100, you can't keep all those balls out. And that's where we are worried.
In Missouri, the positivity rate is more than 21%, and other parts of the Midwest also seeing rising cases. Nebraska record hospitalizations, and in Kansas, sadly, Shep, one nursing home, 10 people dead, dozens of other patients and employees sick. Here in Wisconsin, more than 80% of the hospital beds in this state are still filled, Shep.
Well, Gabe Gutierrez in Milwaukee. Another blow for California's theme park workers and visitors. New today, health officials giving no clear date as to when large theme parks can reopen. The COVID guidelines are strict. The timeline is unclear. The response from Disney, razor sharp. CNBC's Julia Borson live in Los Angeles. Julia?
Shep, that's absolutely right. California prohibiting theme parks, including Disneyland, from opening until a county's COVID-19 risk level drops to minimal spread. That's one coronavirus case per 100,000 people. Disney, along with Universal, has asked to reopen their parks when counties reach moderate spread. That's less than 4 cases per 100,000 people. Now, Disneyland President Ken Patrick saying that Disney has proven it can responsibly reopen parks with science-based health and safety protocols, saying, quote, "These state guidelines will keep us shuttered for the foreseeable future, forcing thousands more people out of work, leading to the inevitable closure of small family-owned businesses and irreparably devastating the Anaheim, Southern California community." Shep.
Julia, thanks. Making plans for vacation, seeing family and friends, even voting, it's all tough in so many ways under COVID, and we're all feeling it. Tonight, we take a deeper look at some of these issues. At the bottom of this news hour, Contessa Brewer talks with a mental health professional who'll give us tips to hopefully make it all easier to handle. Then, at quarter till this news hour, Frank Holland with brand new guidance from the CDC on what's low risk for you and your family at gatherings and what you really need to avoid. First, the early voting totals. They are staggering amid COVID constraints. More than 35 million Americans have now cast a ballot. That's like nothing ever seen in America. It's one quarter of the entire voter turnout from 4 years ago. And our latest CNBC Change Research polls are out today, and they show Joe Biden with a 10-point lead nationally. But we don't vote nationally. And that does not tell the whole story. In 6 swing states, that will go a long way in deciding the election. Things are tightening up. Steve Kornacki digging into the data from these new polls. Steve, which races jump out for you?
Yeah, Shep, there are 2 states here, 2 battlegrounds, Pennsylvania and Florida, that really jump out to me. You see Biden with an advantage of 2 in Pennsylvania, with an advantage of 5 in Florida. And I think when you look at the electoral map and the race for 270, both of these states, I think these are the 2 biggest must-win states for the president if he's going to get reelected. Let me show you why here. This is what happened in 2016, the most direct path to the presidency for Joe Biden. It's simply to flip Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Remember, all 3 of these states were decided by less than 1 point in 2016. You have it in these new polls. Biden leads in all 3, but Pennsylvania's closer. It's closer than Michigan. It's closer than Wisconsin. Trump's closer in Pennsylvania than any of these other 2. We've been seeing that for a while. He has to win one of them. If Biden flips all 3, Biden goes over 270. If Trump can hang on to Pennsylvania, he's back over 270. He gets to 280. So he's got to find a way to win one of these 3 Midwest states. Trump does. Pennsylvania is looking like his best shot. And then you go down to Florida here with 29 electoral votes. And just if I flip this to Biden, look how devastating losing Florida would be to Trump's electoral math. He'd fall all the way down to 251. So he's got to find a way to get one of the 3 Midwest. And Pennsylvania is looking like his best and biggest shot there in terms of the Electoral College. And he's got to hang on to Florida. Other things have to fall into place, but I think these are the 2 most essential building blocks for Trump when it comes to trying to get reelected.
So, see, from the polling, some ground to make up, clearly, but where are their undecided? Where are their voters up for grabs?
This is an interesting stat from the CNBC poll. Take a look at this. Asking people who are not currently supporting Trump, what are the chances you might still support him? 2%, some chance. 4%, small chance. 5%, just a very slight chance. 90% who aren't currently supporting Trump say there's no chance at all. There is a pool of voters there for Trump to tap into, but it's very small, and he's got to really clean up there if he's going to get over the top.
He's done it before. Steve Kornacki, thanks.
You got it.
Some clarity now at the intersection of COVID and politics. Disaster relief from Congress is not coming. Not before the election. Not if the Republican leader in the Senate gets his way. CNBC confirmed this afternoon Mitch McConnell told his members in a closed-door lunch that he advised the White House not to agree to a stimulus bill with the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi until after the election. One source saying McConnell does not want to divide his conference before the vote. Speaker Pelosi gave the White House a deadline of tonight to reach an agreement, but now she says she'll keep negotiating if it doesn't happen by the end of the day. Publicly, everyone in Washington says Americans deserve relief from a disaster they didn't cause and from which many cannot recover without help. But the Democrats have one plan, the Republicans another plan, and the president saying do more. Of course, 2 weeks before the vote, there's politics and everything. Especially something as big, this expensive, and this urgent. CNBC's Kayla Tauchi is live in D.C. Kayla, how do we make sense of all of this?
Well, Shep, at this stage of the game, late stage in the game, it's less about the people getting the relief and more about the political calculus for those negotiating it. And there are a couple scenarios that are emerging. In one, the White House could raise its offer to or beyond the $2.2 trillion package that Speaker Pelosi has put forward. President Trump has suggested he's willing to do that, and he could also agree to more of her deal text. That would get Democrats on board and soon. But there would be significant GOP defections if they were to do that. But if Pelosi and the Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer got all of their members to back the package, only 13 Republicans would be needed. There are 11 Senate Republicans that are currently in re-election races that are either toss-ups or just lean Republican. They might have incentive to back a package. While the GOP vote counter Senator John Thune said getting to 60 would be difficult, for the first time today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he'd be willing to give it a shot.
If such a deal were to clear the House, obviously with a presidential signature promised, we would put it on the floor of the Senate and let the Senate consider it.
But in another scenario, privately, McConnell has advised the White House to pump the brakes on talks, avoid splitting the Republican Party during a Supreme Court battle, and avoid folding for a package that is ballooned from what they proposed back in July. And several senior GOP officials tell me if they were to back a multi-trillion dollar package, it would have been better to do that in August or September, let the money be deposited into Americans' accounts, and let the political goodwill accrue before millions of voters have already headed to the polls. Shep?
Kayla, thanks. And while there's no disagreement, millions of Americans do need help. There's a lot of money from the last relief bill passed months ago that hasn't yet been spent. CNBC's senior economics correspondent Steve Leisman is here. Steve, how much money?
Yeah, Shep, you asked us that question this morning. We spent the day looking for it, and we found you a boatload here. So there's two pots of money where we can accurately identify money not having been spent. There's the $500 billion that Congress gave to the Treasury for airlines and then to give to the Fed for further lending. About $298 billion of that is not spent, so it's just sitting there, and something could be done with that. We found another $130 billion from the PPP, or the Paycheck Protection Program, which was the small business lending program. That also was not spent, so that's sitting there, too. So add it all together, Shep, it's about $420 billion just from those two programs.
Why is it just sitting there still when so many people need it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the PPP program, the deadline for giving the loans expired with that money not loaned out. The part from the Treasury, the $500 billion, a little more controversial. Some people are saying that the rules are too tough. Businesses don't want to borrow money because it's unprofitable for them. Treasury and the Fed, they say they're following the will of Congress.
If I don't have a job, can't pay the rent, can't feed the kids, that sounds like malarkey to me.
Yeah, well, that's the way it goes sometimes. Look, if Congress wants this money, they can reallocate it. They can make a decision. The House and the Senate can get together and they can change that bill, or they can pass new money. But as you see in Washington, Shep, there's a whole lot of malarkey going on.
There is. Steve Leisman, thanks. So where are the voters on this disaster relief or lack thereof? How high on voters' priority list is money from the government during the pandemic? Our CNBC Change research poll shows 2/3 of voters in the battleground states. Remember, they're the ones who matter politically. 2/3 of them say they need help. Kornacki's back with the data. How much of a challenge is this for the president, Steve?
This is the interesting thing, Shep, because you were just talking about the potential of this to split the Republican Party. Look at this divide in the poll here. Overall, you just mentioned it, 66% of voters in the battlegrounds support more relief. This is the Republican number, though. It's completely the opposite. 66% of Republican voters say they oppose more relief coming from Washington. That's the tension Republican lawmakers are feeling. This is what their party's voters are saying. This is what all voters are saying. There's a tension there.
So do the president and Republicans get the blame if this falls through? Does that blame shift to the Democrats, or does the data not answer that question?
Yeah, the data answers it, but it answers it this way. They both get blamed. This is who's to blame if nothing happens here. Trump and the Republicans, 45. Pelosi and the Democrats, 44. I looked one step further at independent voters. It was exactly even there in terms of who they blame.
One more thing. Our CNBC Change research poll showed that back in the summer, Pennsylvania, the Vice President Biden had about an 8-point lead. Now it shows it's down to a 2-point lead. Do we have an idea why that change happened?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the demographics, simply the change has been among white voters in the Midwest states. Mm-hmm. Biden has been outperforming Hillary Clinton among white voters, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Now he's simply not outperforming Clinton by as much as he had been. There might be some voters who've come back to Trump in Pennsylvania and made that one closer. It looks closer right now than Michigan and Wisconsin do. And the Trump campaign, if you look at how they're spending their time and money, they seem to be noticing that.
It feels like one universal truth, cycle after cycle after cycle, Steve, is it tightens at the end almost always.
And here we are. Yep. Yep.
Steve Kornacki, thank you so much. Problems here and there are nothing new at election time. Things always heat up in the final days of an election, but not often like this. A ballot drop box intentionally set on fire in California, tracking down whose votes went up in smoke. We're all feeling it, the stress of the pandemic. Tonight, tips to better mentally cope with COVID.
My brother just came up with this phrase, travel like a rock star.
Plus, concert tours are COVID canceled. Now you can rent a rock star's travel bus for your own road trip.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith, back in 60 seconds.
The largest wildfire in the recorded history of the state of Colorado that's been burning for months now is finally one half contained tonight. It's the Cameron Peak Fire, burning since mid-August near Rocky Mountain National Park. According to the U.S. Forest Service, the wildfire has already scorched more than, get this, 320 square miles. That's an area bigger than the size of the city of New York. And firefighters aren't just battling the flames. Listen to this. The firestorm itself creates brutal winds on top of existing brutal winds that are blasting fire crews. The smoke making it nearly impossible, they tell us, to even see. Over the weekend, another fast-moving wildfire broke out right there. They call it the Calwood Fire. Now the largest wildfire in Boulder County. Sheriff's officials say it has burned more than 9,000 acres and destroyed at least 26 homes. Thousands of people now forced to evacuate. And right now, firefighters have that one 17% contained, they tell us. California also devastated by wildfires this year, forcing tens of thousands to evacuate there. So how does everyone in a disaster area with flames everywhere and burnt embers on the other side cast a ballot? Well, enter Vote Mobile. It's a one-stop shop where people can get a replacement ballot or one in another language, whatever they need. They can vote on site or take it to go. NBC's Jake Ward is in Santa Cruz.
Shep, Santa Cruz has the feeling of the kind of place where nothing goes wrong. I mean, there's surfers here today. A guy went by on a unicycle a moment ago. But this has been a terrible year for this county, as for so many counties. Thousands of people were displaced by a 90,000-acre fire that took place in the hills just a few miles from where I'm standing. And so once that happens, if you've lost your mailbox, how do you get your ballot? How do you vote? Well, in this case, you use the Votemobile. This thing was put together by the Santa Cruz County Clerk, who described to us just how important this project is.
There's people who lost their homes, and, you know, I said, just, you know, you may have lost your home, but you're not losing your right and your ability to vote. So we are going above and beyond to make sure they have access. The thing about election mail is it's not forwardable. So if they did a forwarding address to a family member's house, that ballot's lost.
Now, Shep, with 169,000 registered voters in this county, that's a new record for Santa Cruz. You know, it's just incredible to think that they've got this. They've got 15 ballot boxes to take advantage of, and their traditional polling places on November 3rd. That's how seriously this county is taking voting this cycle.
Well, Shep, Jake Ward, thank you. Then there's this. A ballot drop box set on fire in California. This was last night in Baldwin Park, right outside the library. Look here. L.A. County firefighters had to put a hose through the slot where you drop the envelopes to douse the flames. They cut it open, and inside, they say, they found 200 ballots. Some of them burned, all of them soaking wet. Authorities say this is arson, no question. They're reaching out to everyone whose ballot was destroyed to make sure their votes are, in the end, counted. Diving in to save an elderly couple in New York, and a blast that shakes a neighborhood and ignites a fire in Pennsylvania. On a CNBC trip, coast to coast. Pennsylvania. A huge explosion destroying a house in Huntingdon County. Take a look at this wreckage. The homeowner was inside at the time. Fire officials say two neighbors pulled her to safety. The blast so intense, even the house next door caught fire, and others a half a block away also damaged. No word yet on a cause. Ohio. Former MLB umpire selling his late son's collection of baseball items. He says it's all to benefit the Magic of Michael Foundation, named after his son. More than 850 items up for sale, including a baseball signed by former President Reagan and another signed by the 2006 World Series winning Cardinals. Alaska. U.S. Coast Guard rescuing a deer in Clarence Strait. Crew members say they were patrolling the area when they spotted it. Look at this deer swimming right up to the boat. They pulled it safely on board, but it kept trying to hop back in the water. New York. A car plunges into a Long Island canal after a crash. Authorities say inside, an elderly couple was quickly sinking underwater. Onlookers jumped to the rescue, literally. You can see them diving into the water, one by one.
I saw the car is going slowly going down. I said, oh my God, this guy's good. They're going to die. Then I have to do something. Then I jumped the water.
Cops say seven people, including two officers, helped save the couple on this CNBC trip. Coast to coast. Judge Amy Coney Barrett, one step closer to the U.S. Supreme Court. We now know the Senate is scheduled to vote next Monday to confirm President Trump's nominee. The numbers working in Judge Barrett's extreme favor. Only two Senate Republicans say they will not vote for her nomination ahead of the election. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine, familiar names in such situations. But Republicans can still confirm her with the other 51 votes. And even if something goes astray, VP Pence can break the tie and push Judge Barrett's nomination through. The outcome here is not in doubt. Would you volunteer to be infected with the coronavirus to help the world? The controversial proposal to speed up the development of a vaccine. And what psychologists are calling a mental health tsunami. The pandemic's toll on our well-being. And new advice tonight on how to deal with all the stress. A landmark antitrust lawsuit against Google tops CNBC's On the Money. The government accusing Google of abusing its dominance in online search, stifling competition, hurting consumers. Google, of course, controls nearly 90% of the search market across the country and around the world. The lawsuit marks the biggest legal challenge to the power of a tech company in more than two decades. Google, of course, rejects the government's claims. Think of this. Uber may change the way it does business in California. If a ballot measure fails there, costs could rise for the company and for the rider. The CEO says all options are on the table, including a 20 to 40% hike in large cities and almost double the price in small California cities. Americans stocking up on cleaning products. Pandemic-driven buying, good news for Procter & Gamble. P&G reporting its biggest sales increase in 15 years. Most everybody saw this coming. I mean, who doesn't find themselves searching for such things a lot more than pre-COVID? More time at home means more money to spend on Swiffer mops, Mr. Clean, and Dawn dish soap, all P&G products. New spending habits aren't expected to change anytime soon. On Wall Street, the Dow up 113, the S&P up 16, the NASDAQ up 38. Traders watching the back and forth in Washington on stimulus talks and from time to time seem to be as confused as all the rest of us. The major averages gained back some of yesterday's losses, but not a lot. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. A grim number from the CDC today. The pandemic has caused nearly 300,000 more deaths than we have in a typical year in America. Two-thirds of those from COVID-19. All of this as the country faces the fall surge. America averaging more than 58,000 cases per day over the past week. Average case count up for 13 days in a row now. That's all from Johns Hopkins. One of the many states hard hit is Illinois. More than 2,000 people there now hospitalized, the highest number in more than 4 months. Daily cases up 50% over the past week in Chicago alone. Marianne Ahern, political reporter for NBC 5 Chicago, live with us tonight. Marianne?
Shep, Illinois is adding new restrictions that we haven't seen since late May. Governor Pritzker today, he put in new rules in place in four different counties that surround the Chicago area. It is going to impact 1 in 6 Illinois residents. Here's how it works. When the positivity rate is more than 8%, a rolling rate, then these restrictions are put in place. The biggest factor, indoor dining and bar service will be shut down starting Friday in these four counties. You can eat and drink outside, of course, but if you know the Chicago weather, that's not going to be very conducive starting soon. Businesses are already saying this will likely lead to layoffs. The governor's decision, based on the state health director who is telling him the places of spread, the three top places of spread, work, school, restaurants, and bars.
But Marianne, there's a disagreement, right, between the governor and the mayor of the largest city.
There is a disagreement. It happens quite often. And this time it is between the two health directors, the state health director and the city health director. The city health director tells us it is not so much the restaurants and bars. No, instead, it is your own home that is the area of concern. The city's health director, Dr. Allison Arwadi, says two of three Chicagoans who have COVID know where they got it from, know the person that gave it to them. So there is that disparity. Instead, the home, they're saying, wear a mask when don't invite anyone outside of your circle into your home. Of course, it is challenging in the midst of all these times to balance the health experts with the businesses, especially when you hear some of them saying already tonight they fear they're going to be closing their doors. Hospitalizations have been on the rise in Illinois, but not as high as in places like Wisconsin, where we're seeing a field hospital open there, just right over the border. As for the schools here, Chicago Public Schools have been all remote. They are hoping to open for special education and preschoolers next month. And Illinois sports, no high school sports as far as contact sports, and that has also been a big disagreement. The state on the wrong direction, headed that way, and a lot of angst going on right here in Illinois, Shep.
Man, the second city sounding like a microcosm of the rest of the country. Marianne, so good of you. Thank you. And to all our friends at NBC 5 in Chicago. The stresses of the coronavirus have left mental health professionals incredibly busy. We know how hard these times have been on all of us and will be. So what advice can clinical psychologists offer to any of us struggling with separation, loneliness, work from home, and just about everything else? CNBC's Contessa Brewer with some answers.
Brooke White is an avid runner, a mom supervising remote learning for her kids, and a clinical psychologist. She says in the conversation about frontline workers, mental health professionals are being left out.
We are not exempt from the stress of this time. We are holding up the weight of an enormous amount. A huge percentage of people have had COVID. Many, many, many millions of more than that have had mental health issues.
The demand for help is so great. Online therapy site Talkspace has seen a 100% increase in new users since February. Brooke now sees 35 patients per week, a 40% increase to her pre-pandemic caseload. Her go-to prescription for anyone feeling anxiety? First, talk to someone, whether a friend, family, or professional, but don't sit alone with the stress. Exercise.
It helps with anxiety, with stress, with trauma, with depression. You know, it's one of the best tools we have for mild depression is exercise.
Get outside. Sunshine, fresh air, and nature work wonders. And practice mindfulness.
Moving in and out.
I asked her to show me.
Come back to your breath.
Do you practice what you preach?
Definitely. I would not be able to continue to do my work if I wasn't practicing what I'm preaching.
Well, speaking of preaching, prayer is another way of practicing mindfulness. And another recommendation here, help others. Reaching out to others to be a resource for them. You can volunteer in your community because it's hard to surrender to self-pity if you're not focusing on yourself.
Yeah, good Jeff. Point. You know, so many therapists are now offering teletherapy. There must be challenges in that, though, right?
Yeah, they say there's a lot to learn here, but they say what you learn to do is read the signals differently. And in fact, they say it can be a big help for a lot of people, one, because they don't have to leave the office or home, and two, because they might feel much more comfortable in their familiar surroundings than in a therapist's office. And the research backs that up. It works.
Contessa Brewer with great advice. Thank you, my friend. European countries are bringing back stay-at-home orders tonight as COVID cases are rising sharply. Ireland, the first EU nation to return to lockdown. Non-essential businesses like restaurants and bars closed now for 6 weeks to come. Schools do stay open. The government warning, and I'm quoting, there will be a penalty for people who violate the rules. The prime minister says he hopes the strict measures will curb the spread before the holidays. The new move as regions in Spain and Italy have also issued new lockdown orders. And in the United Kingdom, a controversial project, get this, speed up vaccine development by a program called Challenge Trial. Would you get a vaccine, then get infected with a novel coronavirus to try and help out the rest of the world? Here's Richard Engel in London.
Shep, you might think, who would volunteer to do this? But there are thousands, tens of thousands of people in many countries, including this one, that have volunteered and said they are willing to deliberately get COVID-19. And they are brave volunteers. Many of them are altruistic. They're idealistic. They want to help out. But there is some personal courage involved. We spoke with the researchers, and the way it would work is this. You'd have to go into a secure facility in a hospital here in London if this gets approval, and it's expected to get approval. The scientists then would take the volunteers, they would tilt their heads back, and then using a dropper, the coronavirus would be in a liquid form, they would drop just the right amount of liquid into their nose. They would not use a spray inhaler because they don't want the droplets to go down into people's lungs. So put it into the back of the nose and leave it there. It is a very unusual prospect to go into a hospital where we think you're going to get cured and have a doctor tilt your head back and give you drops of the coronavirus.
Some brave folks, Richard. Now, breaking out of prison, only to go right back in. And not because you have to, but because you suddenly wanted to. That's part of our reporting around the world in 80 seconds. And an international criminal enterprise involving flying rodents. Tonight, trafficking in flying squirrels.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith. Back in 90 seconds.
Nearly a century after a white mob attacked an area of Tulsa known as Black Wall Street, archaeologists saying today they found and identified remains from a victim of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre. Experts estimate that mob killed as many as 300 people and wounded another 800. They also robbed and burned businesses, homes, and churches. You see, Tulsa was once a cultural and economic mecca for African Americans. Researchers began digging the burial sites just yesterday. They say they want to shed light on the violence that historians call one of the bloodiest massacres ever in America. Racing to keep koalas from sliding towards extinction, and prisoners escape in Europe and Africa as we go around the world in 80 seconds. Democratic Republic of Congo. Rebels attack a prison, freeing more than 1,300 inmates in Beni. That's a city near the border with Uganda. The mayor says one prisoner died in the attack. He says at least 20 have already come back, saying they'd rather be locked up than live with the rebels. The jailbreak raising fears of further violence in the region. Denmark, a man dubbed the sub-killer, recaptured after he escaped a jail in Copenhagen. This photo shows Peter Madsen sitting in the grass before cops arrested him. Unclear how he busted out. Madsen serving a life sentence for torturing and murdering a Swedish journalist on his homemade submarine. He cut up her body before dumping it in the ocean. Australia, one of the country's icons, now fighting for survival. Researchers say the bushfires killed or displaced 35,000 koalas. That's 10% of their entire population. Koalas are listed as vulnerable in Australia and could soon be upgraded to endangered. Japan, a royal birthday. The country's former empress turned 86 today. The pandemic canceled Emirata Michiko's birthday ceremony, but that won't stop us from celebrating as we go around the world in 80 seconds. Homicide charges were never an option, and the shooting of Breonna Taylor by Louisville police was not justified. That is the new statement today from a grand juror in the case. It's the first public statement on this issue since the anonymous juror sued in order to speak publicly. A federal judge ruled today that the grand jury now can talk, that historical secrecy concerns are, in this case, null and void, and that the whole case is rare and extraordinary. None of the officers were directly charged with Breonna Taylor's death in the first place. Kentucky's Attorney General Daniel Cameron tried to block the grand juror's request to speak publicly. Cameron hasn't said whether he plans to appeal. Audiences getting their first glimpse of Chadwick Boseman's final performance. The trailer is out for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. It debuts on December the 18th on Netflix. Boseman is best known for his role as Marvel's Black Panther. The 43-year-old died of colon cancer back in August. Cops in Florida say they busted an international trafficking ring, and the contraband is pretty cute. Look at this, little flying squirrels in Florida, because Florida. Wildlife officials say a suspected gang of poachers trapped $1 million worth of these tiny, furry, legally protected rodents, more than 3,000 of the little guys. Investigators say buyers came all the way from South Korea to pick them up as pets, and that smugglers drove the flying squirrels to Chicago and Atlanta so that they could be shipped off to Asia. Seven suspects now face felony charges. Home for the holidays. Sounds mighty good, right? But what's the risk? Tonight, what doctors say is perfectly good to do and what you should definitely avoid as you plan for Thanksgiving, aside from asking Grandpa who he voted for. And if you can't fly, get the family together and hit the road tonight. How you can travel like a rock star since COVID canceled all the concerts. Bizarre. That's what Governor Andrew Cuomo calls New York's quarantine list today. 38 states are now on a travel advisory for New York. It means people who travel to New York from any of these states in red here must quarantine for 14 days. Cuomo says it's bizarre because New York was once the country's top COVID hotspot. Keeping up with who's allowed to come and go where and whether you have to quarantine is a whole lot. And technically, New Jersey's case numbers mean it should be on its own quarantine list. And New Jerseyites shouldn't come across the river to New York either. But none of that's the case. This from the governor today, yesterday. Listen.
My advice is not to travel, frankly, and regardless of where you're going.
That's Phil Murphy of New Jersey. The governor also warning about the upcoming holidays. Right now, he says COVID cases really aren't coming from schools and businesses, but largely from people gathering inside in homes. And we heard earlier it's a similar story in Chicago. The mayor calling for people to stop having parties. All of this putting holiday travel plans in limbo. As the National Institutes of Health warns today, don't do it. CNBC's Frank Holland with how the CDC wants you to prepare.
I want to see everybody, but I'm definitely concerned about everyone's safety.
Sherry Hendrinos may miss holidays with her mom in Detroit for the first time ever to avoid the risk of flying from Houston. That's why the CDC is offering additional ways to keep you and your loved ones safe this holiday season. If you are hosting a get-together, ask your guests to quarantine for 14 days before coming to your home. If you can, consider having your event outdoors. Better ventilation means a safer environment.
I've lost three friends to COVID.
Demetrius Russell is now worried his son, a senior at the University of Pennsylvania, coming home to Boston for Thanksgiving, could put the rest of the family at risk.
Having him quarantined for a while will be considered, as well as, you know, having him take a test as soon as he gets back.
The CDC says low-risk holiday activities include having a small dinner with only people in your household, celebrating virtually with Zoom or other programs, shopping online instead of going to stores, and enjoy parades and other events on TV. The CDC advising to avoid these high-risk activities, shopping in crowded stores, taking part in races, parades, and other events with big crowds, attending large gatherings with people outside of your home, and using drugs or alcohol that can impair your judgment. The potential for exposure from traveling or gathering has many rethinking their holidays.
This is a real disease, it's not a hoax, and that one must take precautions.
And of course, Halloween is the next big holiday up. You can see people already starting to decorate their homes. The CDC advises that traditional trick-or-treating, where kids go door-to-door and get candy handed to them, that is high-risk behavior. They also added that costume masks are not a replacement for a cloth face covering or any other kind of face covering that you would normally use. Shep?
Wear one of those under it. Thanks very much, Frank Holland. One way to hang with your immediate family this year, go on tour. With concerts postponed, well, indefinitely, rock stars apparently aren't using their luxury rock star buses, but somebody ought to. Would you? Here's CNBC's Jane Wells.
This is how rock stars live on the road, but tourists have taken their place.
Who slept here?
Everybody.
Joey and Trent Hemphill have been building buses for everyone from presidents to pop stars for 40 years.
We've done all of Tina Turner's farewell tours.
And there's Dolly Parton.
Right there. Uh-huh.
The Hemphills grew up touring as a successful gospel group that even performed on TNN before borrowing money from their dad in 1980 to buy their first bus to rent out. Now they have over 100 buses.
2020 was going to be our biggest year. It was already booked as our biggest year.
Then came COVID and $30 million in cancellations.
We did not have a departure from this lot for 3 months.
So the brothers put their heads together and decided to market to Americans who saw their cruises or international trips disappear.
And my brother just came up with this phrase, you know, travel like a rock star.
The buses are a lot like being on a five-star cruise. They can sleep up to 12 people, and each part of the bus can be closed off for privacy. Drivers are tested for COVID before any trip, and they stay in prearranged lodgings. The $1,500 a day average cost includes the driver because you cannot drive these yourself.
What kind of turning radius do I have here?
Unless you talk them into it in the company parking lot. So who's renting? The Calderon family was planning to go to South Africa, but when that went away...
Here we are during COVID season. The guys have masks.
They spent about the same amount of money to rent a Hemphill bus and tour America.
And this reminded me
that this country is incredible, that has amazing things.
Just the tiredness that you expect to come from a road trip, I did not feel.
I personally sleep better on the bus than at home. Because
you tell that to everybody.
That's the truth.
Even when live concerts return, the brothers plan to keep a portion of their fleet for tourists. And every day brings a new surprise.
Well, we found a prosthetic leg.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Not long ago.
That's true.
On a bus, okay? And that was kind of crazy. Yeah.
For the news, I'm Jane Wells in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, Jane. NASA has been to the moon and Mars, but they've never done this before. You'll hear from one of the head scientists behind today's historic landing on an asteroid. But first, scientists say they've now measured the shortest amount of time ever recorded. It's called a zeptosecond. It represents 1/1,000,000,000th of a billionth of a second. The theory behind it comes from Albert Einstein, and listening to that scientific information cost you about 10 sextillion zeptoseconds that you'll never get back. And maybe, like me, never understand. So there's this movie called Armageddon, right? Bruce Willis, Ben Affleck, and a bunch of other Hollywood types launched a couple of space shuttles, landed on an asteroid, planted a nuke, and blew it up. Saved the world. All to an Aerosmith soundtrack. Well, this next story is kind of like that, only no nukes and no Steven Tyler, sadly. The OSIRIS-REx Explorer from NASA and Lockheed Martin landed on an asteroid hurtling through space this afternoon and took samples of rocks and dirt. Landed up there. It's the first time NASA has gathered material from an asteroid in space, like ever. With us now is Beth Buck, the mission operations manager of the project at Lockheed Martin. This sounds kind of incredible. How'd it go this afternoon?
Oh my goodness, it was so amazing. It couldn't have gone any better today. It's just been a fantastic day, a fantastic spacecraft, and a fantastic team.
Oh, that's amazing. So you land and gather stuff. What'd you get and what you going to do with it?
So it's the regolith material, the material on the asteroid that's basically been there for 4.5 billion years.
Wow.
And we're there just for a few seconds to get that gathered back so we can bring it back to find out how our solar system formed and what some of those basic organics and water components were early on in the forming of the solar system.
So this thing that scraped the asteroid, what was it? How big was it? How would you describe it?
Sure. We call it the Tag Sam head, and it's a sample acquisition mechanism. It's about the size of an older car air filter.
Huh.
And we actually come down on the surface with that. We compress down. We fire off some gaseous nitrogen to stir up the soil and the material to put that back into that Tag Sam head. And then we back away to protect that spacecraft and to get back so that we can then analyze how much sample we have. And then are we ready to bring that home?
So you did all of that this afternoon. When does it get back and what do you do with it?
Right. So we've got to first make sure we have enough samples. So we'll be working through that the next few days and then determine if we're going to stow that. We'll all that goes well, then we'll leave the asteroid in March of 2021 to head back to Earth. But it's a long ways away, so we're going to actually not get back flying over Earth until September 24th of 2023, and that's when we'll do a ballistic entry with just the sample return capsule, send it into the Utah desert, then send it to Johnson Space Center so that our scientists around the world, as well as our program scientists,
Wow. Can
start analyzing that material.
Incredible. Beth Buck from Lockheed Martin, great luck. We'll check back in with you in a couple of years. 50 seconds left, or 40 on a race to the finish. A new CNBC Change research poll shows Joe Biden's lead in battleground Pennsylvania has shrunk from 8 points in July to just 2 as of this weekend. President Trump holding a rally there tonight in Erie. NBC News confirms the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told Senate Republicans he's encouraging the White House to wait until after the election to make a deal with Democrats on COVID relief. It could be months before Disneyland, Universal, and other major theme parks can reopen in California. And now, you know the news. For this, well, Tuesday, October the 20th, I'm Shepard Smith. Have a great night. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.